From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
The 2020 Democratic presidential race gets underway in earnest as Elizabeth Warren dives in with her candidacy even before the new year. What are the senator from Massachusetts' prospects? And what is she going to run on? Plus, Mitt Romney, the new Republican senator from Utah, a former presidential candidate, starts out his Senate career by blasting Donald Trump and his character in an op-ed in the opposition newspaper, hometown newspaper, The Washington Post. What's his thinking? Welcome to the new year. Happy New Year to everybody. I'm Paul Gigot with The Wall Street Journal, and here to talk about those subjects, Kim Strassel, my colleague. Hi, Kim.
Hi, Paul.
And Kyle Peterson, a member of our editorial board, who for his sins will be covering the Democratic presidential candidates this year. Kyle, how are you?
Hello, hello.
All right. Let's talk about Elizabeth Warren. Kyle, you looked at her video and her early themes that she's going to be stressing. And looks to me like she is going to try to take on Donald Trump's populism with a version of her own.
For sure. The video announcing that she has launched an exploratory committee for president is kind of funny. It's for 30 seconds. It starts out. There's some nice home movie footage. And then it takes a really grim turn, worthy of a Trump inaugural address we wrote. It's American carnage. You know, these aren't cracks that families are falling into. They're traps.
Didn't she try that populist touch, though? Didn't she pop a beer or something? Shows her working in the kitchen.
Yeah, she had over New Year's, she had a fireside chat on Instagram Live where she was very awkwardly popping a beer and showing off her dog. She's not the most natural of politicians, but she is definitely going to try to mirror some of the Trumpian rhetoric. You know, she's also gotten on board some of the liberal sloganeering, Medicare for All she backed. She at a rally last summer, she was talking about the need to abolish ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, and replace it with something that reflects our morality. The difference with her is that she's also proposed some very fundamental changes to America's market system, some that go even further left than Bernie Sanders. I mean, Bernie Sanders has talked a lot about the problem of high drug prices, but Elizabeth Warren has introduced a bill suggesting that the federal government should manufacture generic drugs. I could be wrong, but I'm not sure Bernie has even gone that far.
So that would be a government-run drug maker to compete with private manufacturers of generics. If I were a private manufacturer of generics, what I would suggest is, well, you have zero cost of capital. You can outcompete me no matter what.
Right. Though the problems of central planning suggest that maybe that wouldn't work out that way anyway. I mean, even it was interesting. There's a writer from Mother Jones named Kevin Drum who even threw cold water on this idea and said, you know, there are some things government is good at and some things that government is not good at. And manufacturing has not shown to be one of them over time.
I actually didn't know that there was anything that Kevin Drum didn't think government was good at. But Kim, Elizabeth Warren is, I think, going to be reasonably formidable. I mean, she has a tremendous following on the left by dint of her stalwart opposition to Trump. She created she was the person who created the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, that idea. Hated Tim Geithner, and the love was unrequited. The feeling was mutual, I guess. I mean, and the former Secretary of the Treasury under Obama. She's been a real strong opponent of Wall Street and finance. Thinks that the big banks are entirely evil operations and need to be much more controlled, if not broken up.
Yeah, and there's a belief out there that one of the reasons that she announced on New Year's Eve, which is an unusual time to do it because most people are tuned out to other things, was to get an early jump in here, get that grassroots enthusiasm behind her, raise a lot of money, and then as a result, scare some of her potential competition from even joining the race.
Is that going to work?
So, well, I don't know because You know, it's interesting. Elizabeth Warren's hometown newspaper, the Boston Globe, actually ran an editorial only a couple of weeks ago in which they advocated she not run. And their argument was that her shot was supposed to be back in 2016 when she was essentially begged by many on the progressive left to get in and mount a real opposition to Hillary Clinton. She didn't do it. And their argument is that was your shot back then. It's time to make way for some of the new, more interesting and aggressive people out there. And what they focused on, I think, is in fact Elizabeth Warren's biggest problem is that back in 2016, all of these things that you mentioned, she really had set herself up as a name as the kind of true progressive out there along with Bernie Sanders. But she's not alone in that space anymore. And that's going to be the crowded area in the primary. You're going to have, you know, Joe Biden off as middle class Joe trying to hold the mantle of a more moderate Democratic Party. But the rest of the contenders out there, whether it might be Sherrod Brown or Kamala Harris or Cory Booker or a number of other folks, they're all going to be vying for the progressive space, and that's where she's going to have her competition.
She's going to have a pretty strong grassroots fundraising base, though. I think, what does she have, something like $12 million already in her account, Kyle? So she's
just over
that. So she's going to have a strong position. What did we learn about her foreign policy?
Well, that's a big question. I mean, she wrote a big article in Foreign Affairs magazine talking about a foreign policy for all, which seems, from my view, kind of a nonsensical thing to say. But she's talking about bringing the troops home, cutting the Pentagon budget and putting that money into diplomacy and other domestic programs. But on the real nuts and bolts of foreign policy, I mean, what she thinks about Saudi Arabia, you know, what she thinks about Ukraine, I think those are all really open questions. And one of the things I think she has to prove is that she has more than one issue. I mean, she talks about finance. She talks about reforming capitalism. But I think she has to prove that she can go beyond that and be a full spectrum politician.
What do you think the chances are, Kim, of as you break down the field, where would you put her in the field? In the top tier? Because I think I would put her in the top tier right now, notwithstanding your good point about the fact that the progressive space will be pretty crowded. I do think that by virtue of her name recognition, the head start here, she will she's probably in the top five or six, I would say.
There's no question, because also don't underestimate Elizabeth Warren. If you've ever seen her give a speech or sit and do a panel, she's very spry. She's very tough. She's very quick on her feet. And she's certainly someone that knows her way around. She has spent the last 2 years, even though she didn't get in 2016, really building up a network of connections out there among the grassroots level. You know, she's going to make this four-stop trip out to Iowa. She's building up her campaign structure. But in terms of her connections, these are the folks that you really want to know that help build your field offices, that really do get behind you. She's trying to wrap up and commit a lot of those people in the very beginning, and that's a smart thing to do. It's something that, you know, other successful presidential candidates, that's the way that they've gone about it. So I think she's going to be formidable. She's also, look, I saw an interesting article by David Axelrod saying, you know, she's like Bernie plus. She's not only got all of his policies, but she's a woman. And of course, that matters a lot out in the Democratic primary field.
All right. We're talking about the Democratic presidential race, which is already underway, believe it or not, for 2020. And you're listening to Potomac Watch from The Wall Street Journal.
WSJ Special Access gives you a front row seat to some of The Wall Street Journal's most exciting content, like The Quirkier Side of Life, a new series that features the fun, surprising stories our reporters come across.
The chief executive walks 10,000 barefoot steps every day. He recalls stepping on a bee, which put him off earthing for a couple of days, but he got back to it.
Check out The Quirkier Side of Life on WSJ Special Access, only for WSJ subscribers.
From the opinion pages of The Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. I'm Paul Gigot with Kim Strassel and Kyle Peterson. And just one more point on Elizabeth Warren, and that is the issue of authenticity. The voters do seem to want that. One of the reasons they liked Trump's rough-hewn rhetoric was that. Elizabeth Warren, I guess, running as a populist out of Harvard Law School is not the most natural base for a populist. I guess that takes into – that accounts in part for her stressing her very – a moderate upbringing, a moderate circumstances upbringing. And then there's the issue of her misstep, which I think even people on the left suggest was a misstep with her identification as having some very small fraction of her heritage being Native American, but claiming it as a brand of giving her credibility with identity politics, Kyle.
Right. And I think that could definitely come into play, especially given that the Democratic Party has become so focused on identity. You're absolutely right. Progressives, people on the left, were very upset about that. And it's almost funny because she was sort of goaded into it by Donald Trump, once again showing that one of his great talents is making his enemies, wrong foot themselves.
Yeah, I guess the question is whether or not in a field where identity, Kim, is so important to Democrats' own sense of what the party is and where it should be, whether that's a misstep or the whole Native American business, or whether it's credential.
Well, this point you make, though, about her upbringing, I think even will matter more than the Pocahontas question. You notice when she did that video, she took a lot of time to point out her very hard scrabble roots, very lower middle class, and she had to work her way up. You see Joe Biden doing the same thing. The New York Times had a big profile of him talking about how much money he's made over the years, but how hard he's been working to make sure that he doesn't look like a plutocrat, a wealthy capitalist. So this is going to be part of the identity politics. If you have a bunch of Democrats running out there on income inequality, none of them are going to want to look like the 1%. And so it'll be that and also racial politics and gender politics as well, too. It's going to dominate the Democratic primary.
All right. We will watch that. Much to talk about in the coming year on the Democratic process, Democratic primary fight. Let's move to Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney being the former standard bearer of the Republican Party in 2012, lost, of course, to Barack Obama, but now has won a Senate seat from Utah, replacing Orrin Hatch, and he'll be sworn in on Thursday. But he didn't waste any time, didn't wait until he's sworn in to take out after Donald Trump. In an op-ed in the Washington Post, lambasted the president, saying he has not met the requirements of the presidency, and that in particular, his presidency has declined in dissent, I think was the word he used in December. Firing of General Mattis at the Pentagon as defense secretary. I guess he resigned first, and then Trump said you got to leave earlier than you'd wanted to by the year end. The decision to pull troops out from Syria and so on. So the question, Kim, I guess, is what is Mitt Romney up to here?
Well, he's making his mark in the Senate already. And the interesting question will be where he comes down in the end. He felt the need to do this, I think, because he's obviously been a longtime Trump critic, and he decided he was going to go out there and mark his territory and say that Donald Trump potentially has an opposition figure against him in the Senate. Now, there's obviously a tradition of former presidential candidates, they come to the Senate kind of serving as elder statesmen. We had John McCain and his model of that being a super senator, as it were. But it's also a fine line between being a John McCain who also had his moments when he just seemed to push back against Trump out of sheer peak. And a Jeff Flake, who's just seen as a total spoiler for the reason, not because he necessarily opposed Trump's policies, but because he didn't like the man. And I think Mitt Romney is going to have to make that decision. He said in his op-ed, you know, I'll support those policies that are in the best interest of the country and oppose those that are not. But again, in both McCain and Flake, we saw some senators who seemed to oppose the agenda simply because they liked the attention and being in the middle of the drama. And that isn't going to help Romney at all. It probably would help to have a senator there who was pushing the Trump presidency constantly in the direction of sound policy, but not necessarily acting as a policy spoiler.
Right, right. I mean, he even calls out specific policies in the op-ed. He says he supports the tax cuts, criminal justice reform, conservative justices, deregulation, cracking down on China.
So really, he supports those.
Right, he supports those. So really, the complaint is about tone. I mean, here's a quote. He says, "A presidency shapes the public character of the nation. A president should unite us and inspire us to follow our better angels." And I think Kim's exactly right. The question is, what's the most productive way of doing that? I mean, you look at somebody like Lindsey Graham, who ran in the presidential campaign, lost to Donald Trump, and has used his position to, as Kim was saying, try to steer the Trump presidency in a better direction. Sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't. But it's not obvious to me that chastising President Trump for his tweets and stuff like that in the Washington Post is likely to produce better results.
Well, it's a character attack, right? He says that his criticism is largely based on character and tone, handling himself in the Oval Office in an unpresidential manner. It's a very common criticism. I share most of his views on that front. But I think there might be something larger going on here than just Romney's disagreement with Trump on that matter. I think there's a sense in which Romney may be positioning himself to run against Trump in New Hampshire and Iowa in the early primaries for the nomination a year from now, and putting down his marker early, saying, "See, I told you this is a problem. I'm not going to seem to be opportunistic, rather, later in the game after the Mueller report comes out and where we think Trump is in 9 months. He's going to do it now." And I think one maybe motive here is to say to Jeff Flake, John Kasich, and others who might want to run against Trump for the nomination, don't think that I won't get in. And that might give these other guys pause, Kim.
Oh, absolutely. I agree that is a potential what is going on here. I think the question, though, for Romney, as it is for Jeff Flake, as it is for John Kasich, is, you know, is this something you really want to do, especially in Romney's case, in that he is a failed presidential contender. And sometimes, yes, in the past, you run, you fail to win, and you move up in the line and you're next in line. But we're in a very different space than that these days, as evidenced by the fact that Donald Trump was elected president. There were plenty of people who ran in the last primary who might have been able to claim that argument, that they'd been around a long time, that it was their turn. The electorate didn't see it that way. And, you know, I have no doubt that there is going to be a Republican challenger or many to Trump in this next cycle. But it's going to be a very weird space for them. And it's not necessarily assured that it's going to go many places, especially in Mitt Romney's situation.
Well, I agree with you that it's always very difficult to defeat a sitting president in a nomination fight. Even Gerald Ford, I covered, believe it or not, I'm old enough, 1976, I was in college in New Hampshire. I covered Reagan and Ford, and I even moderated a debate or a Q&A session with Reagan in Hanover, New Hampshire. And he came very close to beating Ford up there, but he came in very close to beating Ford for the nomination, but he didn't prevail. Even somebody as formidable as Ronald Reagan. However, Kim, I mean, don't you think Romney would be the most formidable potential Republican candidate against against Trump if he did decide to run? I mean, certainly more than Jeff Flake, and I think more than John Kasich, who spent the last 2 years kind of alienating himself from a lot of traditional Republican positions.
Oh, no. I think within that field, no question. And maybe that is why he's sending out this warning signal and staking some ground here. Jen, I just think, though, that in addition to all of the things that you mentioned about the powers of incumbency, the difficulty of knocking off a sitting president, that Romney comes to this with more baggage, given his own failed presidential run. And, you know, what I think people would love to see, if for those out there who really just can't stand Donald Trump and claim to care very much about the heart and soul of the conservative movement and that there needs to be a challenger, I have a belief that they'd probably prefer to see someone new who hadn't run at all come and try to take that position.
I'm not so sure I agree with that, but that's interesting. It will be tough, I think, with what is Trump's approval rating, Kyle, with the Republicans 80-85% or so. But there's a kind of a bet on the future here that Romney's making, in a sense, which is that let's assume the Mueller report is very bad. Let's assume that there's impeachment proceedings. Let's assume that Trump's behavior kind of deteriorates in a way that it has in the last few weeks, then maybe more Republicans would turn away, and Romney could figure, well, if I get in, I have a chance to win, and maybe even if we do well enough, Trump won't decide not to run in his own right, because there's no guarantee that he'll run for re-election necessarily. At this stage, though, it's probably the likelihood. But meanwhile, Romney's fairly well positioned. Now, I would say the downside to that is that our friends at the New York Sun said is this looks like a sucker punch. I mean, I can't recall, maybe the two of you can, when a new senator has come in and has his first kind of public act, taking a swing at the president of his own party.
Right. And up until we hit that tipping point where the Mueller report comes out some of this bad stuff starts happening, I think there's going to be backlash to it. Even on January 1st, there was a letter from a Republican National Committee man for the Virgin Islands calling for the RNC to close some loopholes in the renomination process, including Rule 40. Remember Rule 40?
Remind me.
That was during the 2016 convention. There were questions about, what delegates can and can't do. And he's calling for the RNC to pass a resolution declaring unanimous and unequivocal endorsement of President Trump for renomination. So up until the Mueller report comes out and you hit this possible tipping point where people start to move away from President Trump, if we get there, I think there's going to be huge pushback against Mitt Romney.
Do you agree with that, Kim?
Oh, yeah, I do agree with that. I think that Mitt Romney is going to have, because of all of those things we just mentioned, but Kyle makes an excellent point about the institutional desire to look, Republicans in general, especially those that surround Donald Trump and run the apparatus, they have no interest in having any divisive primary anyway, right? Especially if Donald Trump is all in and running again. And I actually think he is. If you look at the money he's been raising and the degree to which he's been focused on his campaign apparatus, in addition to the governance of the country, all signs are is that he absolutely does intend to run against. And the institutional bias there will always be to promote and protect the person who's in office as a better prospect than some starting over and having a divisive primary out there that leaves the party weaker going into a general election.
All right. This will be something to watch, Kim. Thank you, Kyle. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back later in the week with another edition of Potomac Watch.